Hello, welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today's always your host, Evan Sider, and joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page if you aren't already at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support is very much appreciated, as always. And we're joining you guys today, the day after the Suns' stunning victory of the Milwaukee Bucks. And today we're going to focus more on the negative side of things, though, with the Suns. Another ESPN report, a missed dysfunction about the Phoenix Suns, Brendan. And it's not really surprising at this point after the initial reports came out from Adrian Wojnarowski in February, but now this report for Kevin Arnovitz goes even deeper into the reports that Woj initially told us a couple weeks ago. And the details are pretty grim, and it paints another pretty damning picture about the organization.
It paints several damning pictures in very vivid detail, right? I mean, I think what was so striking about this story and how well reported it was, to be honest, in my opinion, he did a great job to actually give detail and context to kind of the outrageous claims that we all kind of know are out there at this point. We know Sarver meddles. We know he might be part of the reason that some of the problems in the past have happened, and we know he's the one making key decisions like firing general managers and coaches right at the beginning of seasons. But to see and kind of read why and how that happens was definitely, I think, necessary for fans and for people like us to be able to kind of sift through the truth. And so, you know, people probably know the GOAT situation by now, that McDonough walked into a little farm of goats sitting in his office to kind of get the message through by Sarver. Hey, we should get a great player. Wouldn't it be great if we got a goat here? And there was fecal matter on the ground as a result of that. Like, that stuff is crazy, but doesn't it actually kind of help to understand like what it looks like day in and day out in that building?
Yeah, it does. And it helps paint a picture about what it's really like. And you think more about it just from the outside, even looking in, Brendan, it's kind of easy to know that this place or the Phoenix Suns organization is kind of one that's aimless right now. And it seems like maybe at their own fortunes with Booker and Ayton, and depending on how the summer goes as well, really how this offseason goes for the Phoenix Suns, it could finally have a direction to go in, because it seems like the last 4 or 5 years, especially the past 2 or 3, there's been really no direction at all.
Yeah, I think some of the interesting stuff too to that end was what Arnovitz got out of people and talking to Jones, as he clearly did here, about really what Jones has done. It's been kind of frustrating, actually, because I think one of the things that I've been just most interested in, and I think the question's been asked in different ways plenty of times by now of him, is, you know, what is he doing? What's like his signature? What's his trademark? And I wrote about it a little bit when he first got promoted, just hit what his focus is on. It's clearly on kind of the nitty gritty, the very kind of overlooked detail type of things. You know, this story mentions the weight room, getting a massage therapist. I think he talked a lot about at the last year Brightside night in 2018, he talked a lot about integrating a regimen that was going to help the young players kind of have that sense of direction and purpose when they walked into the building every day, and really knowing what to expect and how to go about their business. I think that stuff he's been good at, and I think Arnovitz backed that up. I think he painted that picture well too, of really what does it look like every day for Jones doing this job. But I think the other side of it, and as he hits on, is he's not really acting like a general manager, and he has a quote in here that he doesn't really seem like he wants to do the kind of things that we typically associate with a general manager, of scouting, running, you know, strategy meetings, organizing the group below him, and all of that. He says in the story, there's a perception of what a GM does, or what a GM is and what a GM does, that you have to log the hours and open up the laptop. I've never purported to be that guy. And then he goes on to say that he thinks that's why Trevor Buckstein is so valuable to him, and why he's such a key part of the operation. Obviously also a co-interim general manager, that title is something they both share. But were you surprised, first of all, and if you, whatever you felt about how surprised you were, do you think that that's the right thing. I mean, do you think a guy can make a difference operating in that more detail-oriented way, knowing how vast and complicated basketball can be, especially in the NBA?
Personally, I don't. I feel like if that's what Jones's role, or at least what he wants to be, I feel like maybe like a director of player development or player relations, more of what he wants to be, at least from what this quote says and him talking about him not wanting to be in front of a laptop, and his primary focus is to manage and improve the performance and relationships with our different units, like coaching and development of the players, which is his main focus. I think as far as negotiations and tactics, like this cap and all that stuff, I personally don't know if this is true or not, but it seems like he's a guy who's very inexperienced with that, and it seems like he's deferring almost everything to Trevor Bucksy in that sense. And it just seems like if you want to hire him full-time as a GM, you really do need to have a guy like a president of basketball operations, an experienced guy who's running an organization. It's not going to be Trevor Bucksy as a co-interim GM still, Brendan. That it seems like Jones is still a couple years away from really having a really 100% nuance of what's going on.
Yeah, I think you're right about it being more of a, he kind of seems like he wants to be that type of director of personnel, or, and that those people are super valuable, and what he's already done and the things that I mentioned before are super important. And I think that's going to be a key, not only to developing, having better success developing young players going forward, which has been a huge problem for the Suns during the rebuild, is something he mentioned in this story. But it's also going to be important to attract the free agents and the talent that we know the Suns want to have here, and that Robert Sarver has long made a focus. So it's not that what he's doing isn't helpful. It's just that that's not really, I think, what the job is. And the other thing that's just kind of interesting to read now, you mentioned this is obviously connected to the Woj report that kind of blew up locally. Jones kind of agreed with a lot of what I think Woj was getting at. He kind of backed up and defended his lack of interest in filling the positions that Sarver dismissed alongside McDonough. And he kind of backed up the scouting questions by saying, you know, kind of hitting on the using video and technology stuff a little bit more, like he did on the radio the day that the Woj report came out. And doesn't really seem like he wants to change any of the things that are kind of getting a side eye from others around the league. It seems like he's kind of fine with it.
He's kind of adding to it too, if you look into a little more, Brennan, because it says in here as well, in Art of It's a Story, several NBA executives were surprised not to hear from James Jones in the weeks after he was named interim general manager, and they weren't furnished even a business card with information by anyone, or even anyone knew who Trevor Bucksy was. And now everyone will know Bucksy, even though he's been in the organization already for almost 7 to 8 years. So it just seems like it's been a long-running theme that maybe people in the Suns front office aren't really recognized around the league. That people, they kind of work in the shadows, so to say. And especially now, James Jones not even having information for his employees around the league to get a hold of him. Like, that's a big thing for me, in my opinion, that just overlooked. And it seems just like that's the little things that you should just never have to even write about, to be honest.
Yeah, it's crazy too, just to hear that, read that in conjunction or in opposition, really, to the way that we hear Jones talk about how important it is to develop and maintain good relationships with your players, and, you know, indirectly with players around the league, to make yourself a franchise that is appealing to the talent that feels winning. To hear him say that and then kind of disregard to a certain extent the other people in the building that make this operation go is just, it's puzzling. And it just, I think, again, speaks to whether he really has the interest in the day-to-day. It's not fun. Like, I don't think people that do this job love those parts of it either, but it's necessary. And he doesn't really seem like he wants to do it or thinks that it's important. And I just think it is. I mean, the reality is you have to have that guidance, the leadership, the you know, strategy of running a humongous operation like NBA teams are, and he just doesn't seem like he wants to do it. But let's maybe end with this. So the story kind of ends talking about what comes next, which obviously is the huge question here. And I think Arnovitz has a different read on it than you and I. We kind of took that stock of Jones's security or vision going forward around the All-Star break. We did a couple episodes looking into that a little bit more. And Arnovitz wrote, "No one in Phoenix has a strong sense of whether Sarver will install Jones and Buckstein as the permanent managerial team or if he will look outside the organization for a president of basketball operations." I think that's true, the president part, but the no strong sense of whether he will install them is interesting. And then he goes on to wonder, if it's the latter, would the new executive overhaul the front office and eject those who survived the October purge, kind of creating another season next season, even if Igor is there, even if Jones and Buckstein stay, where there's a ton of new faces, a new vision, a new way of doing things that we're talking and writing about all season long again.
It really just wouldn't be a good look. And just to add on, since you mentioned Igor Kokoshkov there, Arnovitz mentioned in his next graph there, sources say the coaching staff led by Igor Kokoshkov is frustrated by a lack of direction as well. They are no less in the dark in the plan Phoenix than the rest of the league. So that's worrisome to me. I know we talked about before that continuity has to be a big thing with the Suns this offseason. It seems like James Jones is going to stay on in some sort of role in the Phoenix Suns organization, same with Trevor Buckstein. I imagine he's already survived two or three general managers at this point. But so the Igor part to me, Brent, is more worrisome to me than the Jones and Buckstein part, because I feel like the president of basketball operations, if they do hire an outside voice, probably will have a bigger say than even a guy like Jones and Buckstein, even though they've been around Sarver longer. But the Igor part, and especially the coaching staff already voicing to sources that they're frustrated by the lack of direction from the organization, that's worse than that.
Yeah, and the way that's worded is interesting too. It's the coaching staff led by Igor Kokoshkov, so that makes me think the person he talked to is at the assistant level. Because I think Igor has talked a lot about how, and Jones both seem to have a good relationship. So to me, either that's them worried just overall about Sarver and how rapidly things change in Phoenix, or it's assistants on Igor's staff not feeling that same level of comfort and connection with the rest of the front office and Igor maybe as well as they were hoping, or just maybe even just having that sense of security is evading them. But there's a lot to chew on here, and I think we'll be referring back to this plenty as we go forward. I think it's nice to have somebody kind of dive in with the sourcing that Arnovitz does to get across the league really what this sense around Phoenix looks like.
I think we can end on one more question here, Brent, about this. And just this is now two reports from ESPN in about a 10-day span. Do you think now the scope and really just the microscope is even zoomed in even closer on the Phoenix Suns now from the NBA point of view? Because it seems like, I know on Bickley Murad today on 98.7 FM, they brought up a good point that it seems like the worst owners in the NBA, just from an outside point of view, have always been run out. So to say, the Maloofs in Sacramento, you had the Donald Sterling situation, and with the Clippers, you also had a former owner in New Orleans and Charlotte as well that got ran out, and the former Golden State Warriors, one that got ran out before Joe Lacob took over. Do you think that maybe they're trying to do the same at Sarver? And it seems like if it's not now, it seems like if the Suns don't get improved, the noise will only get louder from the outside looking in.
I think that's exactly right. And I'm not familiar with what that tends to look like, but I guess if the dominoes continue to fall down, we'll see, because I think this summer is important from not even just building the roster perspective. I think there's plenty of talent around. I think the problem and the focus this summer is going to be all the other stuff and how, you know, they have an arena. That's a key, but getting an infrastructure at the top that's going to be able to propel the team forward and overcome the craziness is going to be important. And if it doesn't happen, and I don't know if we really have any reason to believe it will, then I think that hot seat under Sarver will start to grow, and we'll start to hear a lot more off the record reporting about the league growing concerned about the situation in Phoenix.
Now, before we go on to our final 2 segments of the show today, which will be more NBA draft, folks, I know the Suns have won 3 of their last 4 games now to go to 14-51, but as the lottery standings have been changed. The top three teams in the standings all have an equal odds of number one overall. So the Zion sweepstakes continue to loom large in Phoenix. Before we go on to that, guys, I want to tell you really quickly about our Locked On NBA Twitter account. If you're not already doing so, go and follow at Locked On NBA Net on Twitter. I believe it's one of the more valuable resources out there on NBA Twitter. Brent and I not only follow the account, but also our accounts are synced on there as well for your Phoenix Suns coverage you love here on Locked On Suns. But if you only listen to Locked On Suns, you might be missing out on so much unique voices around the Locked On NBA network that you might be missing out on, like Chicago, Boston, Denver, Utah, Indiana, for example. We have all 30 NBA teams covered for you guys, mostly credentialed too, so it's really exciting to see the growth around the network as well. So if you're not already doing so, go on your Twitter app right now and follow at Locked On NBA Net on Twitter.
Want to also remind you guys about the incredible stuff going on over at Homie. I am graduating college here in like 2 months, and I'm not going to be buying a house right away, but obviously that is something that starts to creep into my thought process. Like, what am I going to do? Where am I going to live? How is that going to go? And it's pretty crazy to think about how much money you spend, not only to buy a house, because that's obviously an investment that you're comfortable with. It's a dream for a lot of people to be able to move into their own home, but the exhausting part is all the fees. So Homie really seeks to change all of that. They sell your home for the same low cost of just $1,500 every single time. That means that on average, Homie customers are saving over $10,000. They can also help you qualify for a $5,000 buyer refund to help you with closing costs. And before any of all of that, they can help you qualify for a loan to make the process of buying that dream home even easier. It makes me feel a lot better to know that something like Homie exists and that I can take advantage of it when I get out there and start looking, and you guys should do the same. To learn more about my friends at Homie, text Homie, that's H-O-M-I-E to 88588. Again, that's Homie, H-O-M-I-E to 88588. Alrighty, did you do a Tankathon sim, or, because I just did one.
Okay, yeah, I was about to do one right now, so
we'll use mine because it is insane. I think the website broke when I hit the button. So why don't I just read the order so people can use that as a frame of reference, and then we'll start and do the first seven picks here in this segment and then the next seven in the next segment. So from 14 to 1, here we go. So Sacramento, who owes their pick to Boston, 14. That's chalk. Lakers, 13. Miami, 12. Charlotte, 11. All chalk so far. New Orleans, 10. Memphis via Boston fell to 9. Chicago fell to 8. Cleveland fell to 7. Phoenix fell to 6. New York fell to 5. And then we have 4 teams jumping into the top 4. Minnesota, Dallas, Atlanta, and Washington won the lottery here.
Washington won the lottery?
Washington is at the top. So you want to start us off with Washington and be on the clock here? I mean, it's not a hard choice, but it's just insane to think about the Wizards winning the lottery.
I'm checking the percentages here really quickly, just number one odds. I'm looking at Washington right now. They go from
7.5%.
Yeah, 7.5%. You see Minnesota goes into the top four, too, at 10.3%. All these teams really near the bottom, Brendan. You have almost a 10% chance going all the way down to number 12 overall, going from – that's crazy. Just looking at these new lottery things, it affects really the bottom half of the lottery more than the top of the lottery, where it could be insane changes like that.
Yeah, the lottery, I mean, honestly, just playing around with it here kind of puts into perspective how crazy things have gotten, where, you know, I think the biggest change is just the number one thing. Of course, if you get the number one pick, you weren't going to get lower than 4, and that isn't obviously not the case here. The Knicks fell to 5 in this one, but just everything, the percentage is just kind of going down across the board. I don't think it'll be this crazy on lottery night, but it certainly will be a little more wild than we're used to. But is anyone but Zion going one for you to Washington?
No, I think Zion goes to Washington here. They get somehow rewarded for this John Wall contract. They get the Zion Williamson sweepstakes winners out of that. But before we go on number two, Brent, I just wanted to ask a caveat here. Are there trades allowed?
Sure. If you can come up with one that makes sense this quickly after this insane order happened, then go for it. But for Atlanta, I think this is beautiful for them. I'm going to go RJ Barrett. I think that's a perfect guy to pair with Trae Young and Kevin Huerter in that wing backcourt rotation. It's a guy who's going to be able to play defense and shoot a little bit. That's exactly what they need with those guys. So that's perfect. I mean, again, maybe they don't hop all the way up there, but if they do, that's pretty incredible.
Now, was Minnesota 3?
Dallas is 3.
Ooh, Dallas is 3. Okay, this is interesting. I'm going to play along here. I'm going to be the Dallas GM. Phoenix, do you want to move up here and get John Morant or no?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I'm – if I'm the Suns, I'm not trying to move up, give something up to go get a guy like that.
Okay, I agree with you. So they'll settle for free agency or they'll do trade to get their point guard need here, and I'll keep the pick with Dallas here. And for me, it's interesting. I'm not going to go John Morant here because they have Luka Doncic, and you see the Dennis Smith Jr. fit didn't work out well there. It could be a similar situation with John Morant in Dallas. I'm going to go with this is tough. I'm going to go with DeAndre Hunter. Kind of off kilter here. Might be a little bit of a reach for some people, but the DeAndre Hunter type of guy next to Luka Doncic, I mean, if Hunter hits and he develops well next to Porzingis and Luka, he is a ideal guy next to Porzingis, especially, and also Luka too.
Yeah, I like a Hunter Porzingis front court at the 4-5 is pretty nice. All righty, Minnesota here at 4. I'm going to go Cam Reddish. I think a guy like that fits kind of the mentality that team's trying to build. Go through Towns offensively and just put a bunch of defense and shooting around him. Maybe they try to add a playmaker this year a little bit, but I think the better plan is to just get who I think at that point is one of the best players available. So Reddish to the Wolves.
Okay. And who's next on the board?
We got the Knicks dropping four spots to number 5 and ruining their plans to get Anthony Davis in the process.
Yeah, could you imagine that? That would be rough.
I know. We had all the 4 top teams all fell 4 spots in this one.
That would just be a horrendous lottery night for everyone involved, including Phoenix. Man, I cannot imagine if this happens on lottery night. Oh, my goodness. But this is tough. This is really tough, actually. I'm going to go with Jarrett Culver just as best player available here. And I think the Knicks, they have Neal Akina. They have Moutier, but they're not long-term guys. You put Culver the 2. You put Durant the 3. I think he's going to go there. Maybe Kyrie Irving. You put Kevin Knox there too. They have all this young talent there now, so maybe put Culver at the 2, Knox at the 3, Mitchell Robinson there as well. Culver's a good guy you can grow behind, maybe a star player for a couple years before he takes off for his own.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see with the Knicks just because they have so much young talent, but they're not going to have to trade it to get these stars because they have so much money. So we're going to get to see how those young guys fit in with the stars that they get and kind of which ones show that they're going to be there long term and who gets traded and all that. It'll be interesting. All right, then the Suns at 6, they ended up with Morant anyway. So there we go. I mean, I don't know if they would keep him in that situation. We're just going to assume that they would take a player. I mean, I guess one thing here, maybe I'll do I'll pose a trade, and you have number 9, so that goes with you. So would Boston, to up the ante on what they can offer to the Pelicans, would they package 14 and 9 to move up to 6 and the Suns can get 2 picks back and go down?
At this point, if it breaks this way, I only chose Culver to the Knicks because I feel like Kyrie Irving's a lock to New York, so I think they're not going to take Morant. So if they somehow luck in the 6, I think Morant would have been the guy to take a 2 anyways. There's no way I think they move back, especially and get 2 more young guys.
Yeah, I guess it would just be like a more wheeling and dealing at that point, but I don't know if we should expect that. So, okay, we'll go Morant at 6. So Morant to the Suns. Cleveland is on the clock here at 7.
Ooh, Cleveland. They need, obviously, a guy to take over at Colin Sexton there. You're looking at the board here. It's really not broken well at all for them right now. But I think a nice little upside swing here for them would be a guy like Nasir Little for Cleveland. All the Duke guys are off the board. Romeo Langford might make sense there, but I don't want another shot chucker next to Colin Sexton. So I think Nasir Little, if he can develop right next to Sexton, kind of a nice little offense-defense duo there.
Yeah, that's pretty solid, I think. A good balance, I think, to have a little there and have some defense. and another raw prospect that I think Cleveland can afford to take a chance on just because they're not in a position really trying to turn things around. They're really just starting a rebuild. So I think Little needs to go to a situation like that where the focus is on player development and building kind of not through him, but with him being a core part of how they want to grow their team. So that makes a lot of sense to me. Before we go on to number eight here and the Bulls to see who they add to their core in this mock draft, I want to tell you guys really quickly, remind you to check out our show if you have a smart speaker. You can do it on your in your car or at your home, wherever you have Bluetooth voice-activated speaker, you can make use of that and check out our show. So if it's smart speaker, you're just going to say play podcast Locked On Phoenix Suns. It'll cue it up all on its own. That's super easy and super simple. Great way to check us out. And if not, if you're in your car, of course, the car's not going to find it for you, but you're all subscribed here, we hope. And just go ahead and make sure you're doing that, making it a part of your routine. It's super simple, and it's a perfect size show to do that. So a bunch of new ways, exciting new ways to check out what we're doing here in addition to all the other ways you guys already support us. And just want to remind you guys about all that. So thank you. And we'll move on here to Chicago. I've liked a lot of the guys at the very top for Chicago, so that makes it a little tough now that they've fallen so much. But maybe I would go with Langford. I'll go Garland, Darius Garland. I don't think Chris Dunn is the answer for them at point guard long term. Zach LaVine might not be there by the time whatever their next good team looks like. I don't know if Zach LaVine will be around at that point. He's older than their core by a few years. So Garland's somebody who they can groom kind of behind Dunn and LaVine. He is recovering from a meniscus injury, but I think he's the second best point guard in this draft and the best like pure scoring guard in the class. So I'm excited about him, and I would put him in Chicago.
Okay. I like that pick. I like it a lot.
All righty. Next we got Memphis, but the pick is, because it fell here, going to Boston, which is, you want to talk about bad luck. I mean, the Suns and Knicks, that's pretty bad, but Memphis losing all these games and then losing their pick by one slot is pretty rough here too. Tankathon hates everybody today.
Yeah, that's a really – imagine being a Grizzly.
Yeah. All right, so does Boston take a player that they want that fits with their core, or do they just go BPA to add to their trade package?
Ooh, I think they do just go BPA. I think there's no way they take a young guy here. So I think they're going to go Jackson Hayes. I think if they do end up keeping him, it'd be an Al Horford replacement, and that might not be too bad. So – what do you think about Jackson Hayes next to Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown if they don't trade him for Davis?
Yeah, I mean, the only concern I would have there, I think it's the right thing to just go BPA for them, but they did just draft Robert Williams, who's had a pretty solid rookie season, even playing behind like two or three guys in front of him. But he's I think, probably the best player available at that point for sure. So it makes sense to me. At 10, we have New Orleans. That one's a little more interesting to me because I think they just need a guy with a high ceiling. And somebody who kind of fits in with the culture that they want to build there post Anthony Davis. I'll go with Keldon Johnson. I've actually been a lot lower on him, watching him more. I really like watching Kentucky, but I just, the more I watch, the more I'm higher on the other guys and lower on him. And so I think he'll go in the lottery just because of his length and shot making, really his 3-point shooting more than anything. But he's a little smaller than you would like, and I don't think he has a lot to do with the ball in his hands, but overall, I think if he does reach that playmaking wing ceiling, then I guess he's probably the guy that New Orleans would want to target.
Now, before you submit that pick here, I'm James Jones. I'm calling you up really quickly. I know Drew Holiday might be available here. What do you think about taking the rights to John Morant? And before you submit that card for Keldon Johnson, I get a experienced guy who's 22 years old, Brandon Clark. I'll take him at number 10 overall. You swap him with John Moran. I'll send you as well a future first round pick in 2020 for Drew Holiday, plus maybe like TJ Warren or Josh Jackson, one of those guys.
The Bucks pick or the Suns own pick?
Uh, I'm not breaking any stepping rules. Do I have to?
Or, oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
So
okay, then the 2021 Suns pick.
Yeah,
correct. Or the Bucks pick.
I'll do 21.
Okay. I think I would do that if I'm New Orleans, to be honest with you, to get Morant, be able to reset things a little bit and go from there and add him to the package that they're going to get from Boston. So Clark is a super interesting guy at the four next to Ayton. If that were to happen, that would be pretty interesting. All right, so no Keldon Johnson. Brandon Clark goes number 10. That would be, he would have to just kill in the tournament and at the combine to go that high, but I wouldn't be terribly surprised. All right, 11 is Charlotte.
Okay, Charlotte. This is an interesting one. Ooh, I'm going to go scoring here. I'm going to roll the dice. I'm going KPJ. Give me KPJ and Kemba and watch them score 40 points tonight.
Yeah, it's crazy to me that Porter has just fallen because of the weird stuff going on with him where he was injured, then he wasn't, people thought he wasn't going to come back to school, and now he's back at USC, but then he got suspended after he returned, and now he's playing, but he, like, they just won't put the ball in his hands. He's kind of just like a floor spacer and secondary attacker. I mean, USC is pretty miserable to watch, but if people have a chance, they're on TV a lot, especially here. It's really weird. He's a crazy player when he gets going. It's just the way his season has gone. I think a team below, even maybe out of the lottery, might be able to snag him and really get a steal. But all right, 12, we have Miami. I think that they're just going to go best player available and trust their infrastructure there. And I think in terms of youth, in terms of overall package, the guy that I would love to see go to the Heat is Sekou Doumbouya. He's barely playing over in France right now, like 10 minutes a game, came back from a thumb surgery. He missed 6 weeks with that, but he's been back. If people have ESPN Plus, Mike Schmitz wrote an awesome feature on him and what's kind of been different about his game and his recovery from that injury and all the different stuff as he comes in. But he's the youngest guy in this class. I think he's about to turn 18. I don't know if he's even 18 yet. So he's going to be super exciting. And I think the Heat, more than anyone else, I trust to develop guys like that. All right, we got 13. We got the Lakers.
This one seems like a random one, especially, I mean, it's kind of a need for them, so it might not be surprising, but I feel like this pick won't be used at all for the Lakers for next year. It'll be used for a Pelicans or the Wizards or whoever else they trade for a star. I think some of those guys will be off the team next year. But for me, I'm going to go interesting pick if they do keep it overall, Brent. That's Bol Bol. Just imagine Bol Bol and LeBron James together.
Yeah, Bol Bol in his prime with LeBron James, but I agree with you. I mean, especially a guy like that. LeBron's not waiting around for the rawest prospect in this draft to come around, but that's like an ideal guy if it were to actually work, somebody who can protect the rim and shoot.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And you think that's kind of like a Brooke Lopez on steroids.
Yeah, exactly. I'm excited to see what happens with Bol. I agree, that might be a guy where they just take him if another team is interested in his ceiling and use him as part of the trade package. If they keep the guy, I really like Nikhil Alexander-Walker there. Just a pure Josh Hart type shooter, playmaker, another guy that's pretty perfect next to LeBron who could actually probably play right away because he's a sophomore. So that's one if they really just say, you know, we're going to try to build this thing through the youth. It seems like a long shot, but maybe they'll look around and they don't really have many other options there. But finishing things out here, we have Boston yet again, Sacramento finishing at 14, just out of the playoffs, and losing their pick to the Celtics here, which they will do unless it goes number one, in which case it goes to the Sixers. Unlikely to happen there. The Sixers have, or the Kings have a 2.4% chance of getting into the top four, but only a 0.5% chance of actually getting that number one pick and sending it to Philly. So that would be pretty insane lottery night, but I don't think it's going to happen. Anyway, the Celtics, I think they go again, just best player available here, which is going to be another weird part of draft night, is these guys at the very back trading, in all likelihood, trading these players. And so it'll affect the bottom of the draft, even though these teams don't even have a particular attachment to the guys they're taking. But I will go here, probably Rui Hachimura. I think he's a guy that teams are going to talk themselves into, even though there's still questions about his decision-making and his defense. It just seems like if Gonzaga gets to a Final Four again with this crazy team that they've put together and he's leading them, he's still incredibly productive. He's scoring 27.1 points per 40 minutes on a 66% true shooting. Like, the numbers are there, and I think the size is obviously there. I think teams will buy more than draft Twitter does what Rui is doing this year.
Yeah, we saw him in person. If you guys remember, we were there to recap the Tennessee-Gonzaga game to see Adam Schofield, Achimura, and Brandon Clark, too. That was kind of the first game where Brandon Clark kind of popped on the national scene. But Achimura, if he goes to the right player development place, like a Giannis situation in Milwaukee, he could be a guy who, like, 3 or 4 years from now is a really good, really, really good player.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't know if I think the Pelicans are that team, but I'm excited to see what happens with him. And I think, you know, he has all the skills there. If all you're trying to do is coach the right habits and the right instincts to him, I think that's sometimes can be the easy part if you have a guy as skilled as him. The only other guy I would consider at 14, maybe going kind of BPA there, is Jontay Porter. I think he's another guy who, once the injury stuff wears off and teams get to talk to him and talk to his agent and really remind themselves of what makes him so special, I think we could see him going in the lottery as well.
Now, before we end today's podcast, Brian, I just want to recap just the craziness of this. There was a lot of movement, entirely new top four out of this. I don't even know how that happened. I've never seen that thing if that happened to me before. At least,
you know, I clicked the button when you were finishing out your thing on the last segment and just to get ready, and I was like, holy crap, what the hell just happened here?
Yeah, it's looked like an atomic bomb went off on Tankathon, it seemed like on your end, and it caused some craziness on our draft board. And the one trade that we agreed upon was sending Drew Holiday to Phoenix for the rights to John Morant, number 6 overall, with either TJ Warren or Josh Jackson. Which one did you end up settling on if you're the Pelicans? Would you rather prefer Warren or Jackson?
I think I would rather have TJ.
Okay.
Just somebody to score a contract that works a little better. And then I think Josh, you know, it's tough to talk yourself into him. They also just took Stanley Johnson, who is like Josh Jackson East. So I'll go TJ.
That's true with Stanley Johnson. So you add in the rights to John Morant, TJ Warren, and a 2021, I imagine, protected like top 1, top 3 protected first round pick in 2021. So a really good haul to reset for the Pelicans. The Suns also got back Brandon Clark from Gonzaga, who'd be a nice foreign to DeAndre and with Drew Holiday. So to recap that trade really quickly, Brandon, if the board falls that way and the Suns do have a kind of a worst case scenario falling out from currently the number 2 slot in the Tankathon standings to down to 5, 6, or even number 4 overall, do you think they trade that pick like this scenario that happened today?
I think they definitely could. I think we could definitely see them trading it, even if they're higher than that.
How high would you go? Because I think Zion's obviously number 1, but do you think even number 2, number 3, you have qualms about it?
I think the Suns would be open to trading anything outside of number 1, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it really is. It seems like Zion or bust. I know there's been some blowback from – I know there's some kind of damage control that was going on as far as how important this draft was, but that'd be kind of – contradicting what I was told about me and you and Dave King over our Brightside Night for Brightside Night 2019. He's like free and he's more focused along with trades. So if this lottery scenario indeed does happen, Brian, I imagine this trade that we did with for Drew Holiday makes a lot of sense here. But anything else as far as today's podcast, as far as the Suns drama or anything else with the mock draft goes?
No, I think if this is how it turns out, it would be one of the more fun draft nights and fun lottery nights that I can remember. But either way, hopefully you guys got a little taste of where things stand with some of the prospects going into the stretch run here and where we start to really ramp it up. And these guys will get in front of NBA teams. We'll see them at the combine. We'll be able to talk to them, reporting for you guys, Evan and I, at the arena when they bring them in for workouts. All that stuff is coming sooner than we think. So hopefully this is a little bit of a snapshot for right now.
What's crazy is that's like only like 9, 10 weeks away. So that's going to be coming up really fast here.